Hello, friends. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and welcome to a new All Things Murder. Welcome to All Things Murder, the show that dives into real true crime cases that inspired pop culture movies and shows we all know today. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Gainesville Ripper and how this serial killer inspired cult classic movie Scream and slasher Ghostface. This gory case is a doozy, so listener's discretion is advised. The Gainesville Ripper, also known as Danny Rowling. Danny Harold Rowling was born on May 26, 1954, in Shreveport, Louisiana, and like majority of serial killers, he did not have the best childhood. His father, James, was a decorated Korean War veteran turned police officer who just abused everyone in the home physically and emotionally. It was said James never wanted children, even would tell Danny that he was unwanted from birth. The abuse got so bad over the years that at 11, Danny began experimenting with drugs, alcohol, and even attempted suicide just to escape from his dad. At 14, Danny started to peep into girls' bedrooms. His dad would later beat him for that. Danny said he attempted to stay in control by going to church, playing guitar, and working, but he did have a hard time keeping a job. After high school, Danny enlisted into the Air Force, but was dishonorably discharged for drug possession, which included taking acid more than 100 times. How does somebody even function after taking acid more than one time? After being discharged, he met a woman named O'Mather Halco, and in September of 1974, they got married, and soon after, they had their daughter. So it seems like life is pretty normal. Normalcy did not last long because in 1977, Danny's wife left him after he threatened to kill her. Like father, like son. Obviously pissed off about his wife leaving him, he decided to go out and rape a woman who closely resembled that of his ex-wife. Now, from 1976 to 1990, Danny committed a series of crimes, which included armed robberies and theft, that got him landed in jails in Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, and Alabama. Now, with him having a record, obviously it did not help him keeping a job. And on Friday, November 4th, 1989, after being fired from a restaurant, Danny broke into the home of 55-year-old Tom Grissom, where there he committed his first murder. Tom was just preparing dinner for his 25-year-old daughter, Julie, and his 8-year-old grandson, Sean, when Danny broke in. He killed Tom first by stabbing him multiple times in the back and chest before moving on to Sean and Julie. All three of his victims were found stabbed multiple times in the back and chest, but Julie's body was the only one that was found naked, posed, and cleaned with vinegar. Interesting. About a year earlier, in July of 1988, before the murders, Danny moved back in with his parents, with his abusive father, while he was serving his parole after being arrested in 1985 in Mississippi after he tried to rob a grocery store. Why does this matter? Well, Danny's parents lived only 10 minutes away from Beth Lane, where the Grissom murders happened. 6 months after the murders, Danny and his father got into one final argument. But this time, Danny escalated things and shot his father, James, in the stomach and head. James survived, but lost an ear and an eye. After attempting to kill his father, Danny broke into yet another house and stole the identity of a Michael Kennedy Jr. and would hop on a bus to Sarasota, Florida to start a new life. He would later venture from Sarasota to Gainesville, where he would set up a campsite in a wooded area behind the University of Florida, where Danny embarked on his murder spree as students began the fall semester. The murder spree. Friday, August 24th, 1990, Danny broke into the apartment shared by 17-year-old University of Florida freshmen Sonia Larson and Christina Powell. Danny first killed Sonia as he taped her mouth shut so she couldn't scream. She died trying to fight him off. Christina also had her mouth taped. Her wrists were tied behind her back. Danny cut off her clothes, then proceeded to rape her before turning her over and stabbing her 5 times in the back. Now, before exiting the apartment, he would pose the bodies in a sexually provocative way. He would take a shower and then he would leave. The following day, he made an 18-year-old Santa Fe Community College student, Krista Hoyt, his next victim. But this time, he left behind her severed head on a shelf to face her body propped up on the bed. He later claimed his intent was to add to the shock of whoever discovered her. By this point, the murders had attracted widespread media attention, where they labeled the killer the Gainesville Ripper. Many students had begun taking extra precautions, such as changing their daily routine. People would sleep together in groups. They would bring baseball bats with them everywhere. Some even slept in shifts so somebody was awake at all times. I mean, this is a serious thing. I would be freaking out too. Since the spree was happening so early in the fall semester, some students withdrew their enrollment or transferred to other schools. Now, remember when I said Danny was arrested numerous times for robbery? So on the day of Krista's murder, police also responded to a robbery at a bank about a mile and a half from her home. The teller told police that she did slip a red dye bag in, and later that night, an officer noticed a man walking into a wooded area. So the mystery man did get away, but the police officer found a screwdriver along with the bag of money with the dye in it, a cassette player with the tape inside. So police did what they had to do to collect all the evidence, and at the time, they did not connect the bank robbery to the student murders because a gun was found at the campsite and all of the murders involved a knife. On Monday, August 27th, 1990, killer struck again at the home of two 23-year-old University of Florida students, Manuel Tabota and Tracy Paulus. So as Danny's method of breaking into houses is he would use a screwdriver to pry his way through the door. Now, he found Manuel asleep in one of the bedrooms, and Manuel woke up to see an intruder in his home. He tried to fight him off. Unfortunately, Manuel was killed during the struggle. Now, hearing all this commotion, Tracy went down the hall and saw Manuel and saw the intruder. So she would run back to her bedroom, and she tried to barricade the door, but unfortunately, Danny still got in. And like with his previous victims, he would tape her mouth and her wrists, cut off her clothing before he raped her, and then turned her over, stabbed her 3 times in the back. Like with his previous murders, he did pose Tracy's bodies, but left Manuel's in the same position in which he died. All of these murders occurred less than 2 miles from each other around the University of Florida. By the end of August, thousands of students left campus and around 700 never came back because they feared for their lives. Now, if you're like me, you're probably thinking, how in the hell did this guy escape police's radar? So keep in mind, Danny's dad was a police officer, and growing up in a police household, he knew how to not leave evidence behind. For instance, instead of leaving the duct tape on his dead bodies, he would dispose of it in dumpsters to get rid of any fingerprints. He would also use the cleaning solvents on the bodies to remove any traces of semen. Authorities initially suspected another student who lived near two of the victims, and he was displaying erratic and violent behavior. This student was known to carry knives and was off his medication for a mental health disorder, and he had visible scars on his face from a car accident. It was soon revealed later on that the student was battling acute manic depression, and they had zero evidence connecting him to the murders, so the task force was back to the drawing board. So Danny was thinking he was probably in the clear since he disposed of any evidence, right? And this man continued to commit robberies throughout all of the state. Like, why, dude? Just gonna say, if you are wanted for murder and are trying to escape police's radar, how about don't commit other crimes so you can remain under the radar. I'm just saying. One investigator started to notice the similarities between the murders committed in Gainesville and the murders committed in Shreveport. Remember the Grissom murders? He noticed the posing of the victims, the tape residue on the victim's body, and the vinegar used to clean the body. There were also other patterns investigators noted, like how the killer would enter the home through the back door, and each home was near a wooded area, which would allow the killer to get in without being noticed. Enter Don Maines. So Maines was the investigator that noticed the similarities between the cases in Shreveport and the cases in Gainesville. So he decided to take a trip to Shreveport, and he started digging, where he later discovered DNA evidence left behind at the Grissom home murders. Uh-oh. They tested the bodily fluids from the perpetrator in Shreveport and discovered that this person's blood type was type B. He called the match to the evidence in Gainesville a revelation in this case. Like, oh yeah, killer, I'm gonna get your ass. So how did they finally catch the Gainesville Ripper? So police were receiving several tips from concerned parents and residents, which made them apprehend the college student who, as we know, was not connected to the murders. However, not too long after Maines got back on his trip, he got a tip from a Shreveport resident, Cindy Urich, who reported that Danny Rowland was possibly connected to the murders in both cities. She met Danny at her local church back in Louisiana and told authorities that Danny said deeply disturbing things to her and her then-husband, Stephen Dobbin, such as, quote, "One day, I'm gonna leave this town, and I'm gonna go where the girls are beautiful and I can just lay in the sun and watch beautiful women all day." And he even admitted to Stephen he likes to stick knives into people. Like, dude, you're not keeping a low profile at all. Investigators responded to her tip and quickly found Danny, who was already arrested on September 7th, 1990, for another supermarket robbery just 40 miles south of Gainesville. This robbery was committed 10 days after the bodies of Manuel and Tracy were found. Investigators determined that Danny had type blood B after he had a tooth extracted during one of his numerous arrests. And like the suspect in both Gainesville and the Shreveport murders, his DNA was a match. Now, once Florida investigators realized that Danny had multiple convictions for armed robbery, they started thinking back about that robbery that occurred on the day they found Krista Hoyt's body. So they returned to the evidence locker where their gun, the screwdriver, the bag of money, and the cassette player were stored. And they finally listened to the tapes. Why didn't you do this earlier? Why? Detective Maines even told reporters, quote, "If we had played the tape before, we would have had this guy 3 months ago. But for some reason, somehow, that tape escaped us, and I'll freely admit it." Conviction. On November 15th, 1991, Danny Rowland was convicted of 5 counts of first-degree murder and was facing the death penalty. Danny was brought to trial nearly 4 years after the murders, and he would claim his motive was to become a, quote, "superstar," similar to Ted Bundy. As the great Bailey Sarian would say, get better idols. On April 20th, 1994, Danny Rowland was sentenced to death. While in prison, Danny was diagnosed with an antipersonality disorder, a borderline personality disorder, and paraphilia. Prosecutor Rod Smith believes Danny came up with the multiple personality story after he watched the film Exorcist 3 just a few weeks before committing his first murder. Now, if you haven't seen Exorcist 3, it's just about an executed serial killer named Gemini who would possess people and then force them to commit murders. And Danny thought this was a sign, since he was a Gemini. Dear God, please don't take your zodiac signs as a sign to murder people. While in prison, Danny remarried to a woman named Sandra London, who, just get this, was also the ex-girlfriend of a former deputy sheriff, Gerard John Schaefer, who was a convicted murderer and a suspected serial killer. Somebody has a type. Sandra London was a true crime author and a freelance journalist who, thanks to her connections with both men, she would get an inside scoop on all their crimes, leading to her collaboration and to publish her findings. On October 25th, 2006, in a Florida state prison, Danny Rowland was executed by a lethal injection after the U.S. Supreme Court rejected a last-ditch appeal. He was pronounced dead at 6:13 p.m. So how did the Gainesville Ripper inspire Scream? So Kevin Williamson was an aspiring writer in the 1990s, and he was home alone watching TV when the Gainesville Ripper segment caught his attention. As he was watching, he noticed an open window in his living room and realized how easy it would be for someone to come in and just kill him. If you're like me, home invasion is a genuine fear of yours because that shit happens every day. Instead of freaking him out too much, the realization actually inspired him to write a screenplay for a horror movie, which he wanted to be revolved around murders of college students and the media frenzy that ensued. He actually wrote it called Scary Movie. We all know it eventually becomes Scream. Now, he wanted to write about a serial killer on a college campus and an FBI agent hunting down a college professor. How cool would it have been if Dewey worked for the FBI? I'm just saying. And if you haven't seen Scream, it is just an amazing cult classic movie. Please go check it out. It is truly fantastic. I do pray that the next one does have Neve Campbell. Definitely think she's going to come back. Just my thoughts. And that concludes today's episode. Rest in peace to the poor victims of this horrific crime. Thank you guys so much for joining me. Once again, I am Marissa Blackwood, and tune in next week for a new All Things Murder. If you dare. If you're a fan of horror movies or true crime, or perhaps both like myself, don't forget to like and subscribe, and don't forget to check out my TikTok at Sinister Marissa.